This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Wednesday, 27th of October, 2021. Just want to flag at the top of our program, we are recording a very special edition of the Saxo Market Call podcast tomorrow with Thomas Jan Petersen, chairman of Copenhagen Atomics, a very fascinating company dealing with the next generation of nuclear power, especially thorium power, and how all that will work, what the outlook is in the whole sector, challenges, etc. We're not going to use it as a chance for them to simply have an infomercial. We're going to ask some hard-hitting questions, hopefully, as well. If you'd like to join in, of course, tune into the podcast. But prior to that, please do send any questions you might have to the @SaxoMarketCall Twitter handle or to our email that we listed at the end of the show. Again, any questions you have, we've already got a couple of good ones rolling in. So we're really looking forward to that, and I hope you are too. So tune in tomorrow. And then, Ole, you have a webinar up today in the commodities space, your monthly update. What are we looking at in commodities?
Well, we're looking at the continued tightness in the market, where we're increasingly seeing a commodity market rather being driven by tight supply and not necessarily strong demand, because we are seeing an economic slowdown right now with the not only to a certain extent driven by these very high commodity prices. So we're just going to take a run through, seeing some of the just also what's just moving the market right now. So hopefully some inspiration and ideas there.
Yeah, tune in to that today at noon CET, and you can sign up webinars.saxo. You can find his update there. So the sign up, and as well, we put out a recording of that about a day later. All right, let's get to the market action. Yesterday, quite interesting. We saw yet another extension higher in the market action, I think to a large degree led by this ongoing melt up in Tesla. Sorry to say, but it is true. We've seen a couple hundred billion of, from recent lows just a couple days ago to the highs yesterday in Tesla, a couple hundred billion dollars of market cap creation. So when that thing is moving that much, of course, it's dragging the whole market around. And you can see on slide 4 that Tesla was with much greater amplitude, but the market as well extending higher and then closing back towards where it opened. So a classic sort of doji or shooting star setup. Quite interesting. Sort of the first, sign of real weakness, I would say. Like I said, a couple of weeks. So of course, it remains to be seen what this results in terms of the follow-on price action. I've got some thoughts on what is driving this market much further along in today's podcast. But just your quick takeaway, Peter, on yesterday's session and anything else you're seeing overnight, especially, I guess, with the big earnings headlines.
I see yesterday's price action in combination with the day before, so on Monday, and with Tesla and the growth pack around that company charging the sentiment. So I subscribe mostly to that yesterday's price action was noise. I think the price action you're seeing today with the continued momentum is the real signal. We had very strong earnings from Microsoft and Alphabet and and Visa. And here in Europe, we have had a whole bunch of very strong earnings for the most part. So overall, that has carrying equities high. I think it's worth noting on slide 4 as well that India had a good session. I mean, our Indian basket is up 41%. I just looked at the outperformance versus China over since the lows during the pandemic. It's now almost 70% in total return dollar terms. And we haven't seen such an outperformance in India versus China since the commodity bull market from 2000 to 2007. So it's really, I still have India on my radar. Mega caps doing quite well, obviously, because of the strong earnings we're getting from this group. And then battery is a continuation of this positive story from Tesla. But I will talk more about earnings in my earnings update. But I think it's important to note as well, I just talked on CNBC about this theme. And I think it's pretty clear now from the earnings we've got, sorry, my voice is terrible this morning, that margins, net profit margins, very much likely peaked in Q2. So what we're seeing and what we're observing is that revenue still looks pretty robust on a quarter-to-quarter basis. Earnings per share, on the other hand, is not growing as much. We were in negative quarter-on-quarter yesterday, but now we've moved into positive quarter-on-quarter. But I think profit margins will be coming under pressure in the coming quarters. And that changes the entire environment for equities because that removes the easy tailwind on earnings growth. And that coincides with high equity valuations, rising interest rates and inflation expectations, and these rising commodity prices. So I think we're shaping up to moving into a much more different equity environment that we have been used to now for the last 18, 20 months or so. So I think this is really a theme to be watching in the coming quarters.
Yeah, we've talked a little bit just to round out the whole the Tesla thing and the cluster, as you've called it, of speculation and linkage of that to potentially to cryptocurrencies, et cetera. It's quite interesting to note Bitcoin off $2,000 from yesterday's close, just as we're speaking here, looking at the $6,000 level, and even Ethereum getting a little bit spooked here. I don't know what the immediate cause of this is. I saw one headline, the Robinhood shares were down heavily as crypto trading revenue declined sharply. So that's an interesting one. But I would be curious to see if those two particular instruments could head dramatically in different directions. Let's have a look briefly at a couple of FX stories I want to get through today. So we had the Australian CPI overnight. We previewed that yesterday, and it was a bit interesting, the market's reaction to that, because we did see headline coming in as expected, the 3.0%, actually very slightly below the 3.1% year-on-year expected. Quarter on quarter is 0.8% as expected, but it was at this so-called trimmed mean measure that was higher, considerably higher than expected, 0.7% quarter on quarter and 2.1% year on year versus 0.5 and 1.8 expected. But it's more interesting the market reaction here. So if you look at where the two-year rate is in Australia, you can see it on slide 6 on the right there, jumped around 20 basis points overnight, a very significant move. The Australian dollar itself getting some support in the crosses versus Canadian dollar versus Kiwi and a little bit versus the dollar, but the FX reaction was far less pronounced than what we saw in the actual rate moves. Quite interesting there. And then moving on, today we have the Bank of Canada after their tremendous repricing of yields over the last couple of months. You can see that on the next slide, slide 7, the two-year rate there on the right. And then that tiny little inset in the lower left is the Canadian U.S. versus Canada two-year spread, which is obviously at cycle lows here, way below zero and below minus 50 basis points. This has helped drag dollar Canada lower, but we're far from cycle lows and the market pausing there, waiting for guidance from the Bank of Canada today, which is key because their last big guidance was the meeting before last. They do the press conferences and outlooks, guidance updates every other meeting. And today is the meeting with the press conference and with the update on guidance. So and they're still keeping that second half next year timeframe for liftoff. Could be catch the market by surprise on the dovish side. Of course, a shift towards the more hawkish side is partially priced in, and would have to exceed where the market is in terms of moving those short rates. Elsewhere today in FX, a really big focus on sterling, under a little bit of pressure today because people recognizing how important the fiscal side is for the UK and for sterling. Tends to be the rhetoric here is that they're looking to significantly downgrade the rate of fiscal support for the economy. The degree to which that is the case relative to expectations here is going to be important for the outlook for sterling. And so a more sort of hawkish, fiscally hawkish, in other words, more austere budget could risk seeing some further consolidation in sterling. You can see on slide 8 where we are in cable. Yesterday's little rally attempt was quickly beaten back. Sort of at neutral here, waiting further inputs. And you can see the FX trends where we've seen Canada, for example, declining almost all the way back to zero in trending terms, broadly speaking, ahead of today's Bank of Canada meeting. The euro really struggling, although euro dollar is really, really stuck in this 116 range. All right, I've been blathering on. I've got a couple of thoughts on what's driving the equity market. I'd like to talk to you, Peter, but we need to get over to the commodity space. Besides the webinar today, there's plenty going on. We have a interesting setup, at least in the U.S., where those natural gas prices rose higher, but we were a bit toppish in crude yesterday. Was that on the latest weekly API supply numbers?
Yeah, and I think just generally the market is looking like it's run a little bit out of gas, sorry about the pun, here, at least in the short term. The overall outlook obviously remains quite supportive with very tight supplies, but obviously the market's been rallying now for for several weeks. And we're just seeing the some profit taking starting to emerge. We've seen that already for the past few weeks from hedge funds. They've been net selling of crude oil, even though the market's been going up. So we may just could just be a signal of a pause here, at least for now. On slide 10, I'm just highlighting WTI crude because we got the EIA report out late today, and as you mentioned, John, some of the response to the or the weakness came after yesterday's report, which basically showed. That the or where API reported a 2.3 million barrel increase, but at the same time, and I think that's probably more importantly right now for WTI, the stock levels at Cushing was estimated to have dropped by another 3.7 million barrels. Inventory rising, crude oil this time of year is perfectly normal. Refineries, they are cutting back, they are going into maintenance, so crude oil stocks tend to rise this time of year. But Cushing, on the other hand, you can see, which is a very important delivery hub for WTI futures, continues to decline. I was on a webinar this morning with the Gulf Intelligence in Dubai, and one of the participants from the US basically is highlighted 28 million barrels as a pain level for Cushing. When we start to get below this level, we could start to see some disorderly markets in the WTI market. And we're seeing that to a certain extent already, because that small insert I have here as well on slide 10 just shows the spreads for the next 6 months out, starting from this December. We basically got the backwardation of more than a dollar every single month all the way out to June next year almost, and that basically just highlight the tightness in the U.S. market right now. So we really need to keep an eye on these inventory levels because they have added on to adding some additional importance. And I think then just also cue to Peter, we got the Big Five oil companies starting to report. There are expectations that they could generate something like $28 billion worth of cash. And that's the highest in 13 years. So the question is obviously, are they going to buybacks? Are they going to send it back to investors? Are they going to spend it on CapEx? That's really going to be important for the outlook for crude oil here.
I agree. I agree, Ole. And it's something that we'll get ExxonMobil and Chevron reporting on Friday. So I think next week, this week I will set up a spreadsheet to track the CapEx numbers, but also look into the earnings release and what the guidance is. I'm pretty sure that a lot of the oil companies right now are talking about raising dividends and buying back their own shares. I think that's also the signal from Equinor in Norway this morning. I think they and that sits inside this current tension between ESG and the energy crisis, and then the need to attract investments and financing and getting investors on board. It's very difficult for these companies, and you can always lure investors in by giving them offering that an attractive yield. And I know, I mean, our CIO Stig Jakobsen also talked about this. I think, and we have talked about it recently, the ESG versus as an opposition to the oil and gas business, I think is going to be a fascinating theme to watch next year. I think we're already beginning to see some cracks in the ESG space. Although you have this morning from DWS, the asset management arm of Deutsche Bank, they're getting almost half of all their net asset inflow into ESG funds. So I think the space are getting extremely crowded, and then at the same time, you're getting all this alpha in non-ESG parts of the market. So how do you square that as an investor with a fiduciary duty to deliver high returns to your customers or your clients?
And if I could just finish off the energy space, because I think another reason why we are seeing weakness in the stock in the oil markets today is basically that there's been some news from the German ministry telling the regulators that the Nord Stream 2 does not pose any risk. So that's raised optimism about an approval of the Nord Stream 2 pipeline, which could send more gas to Europe. But we just have to keep in mind that we got the colder weather forecast for next month. Quite naturally, but that will increase demand. At the same time, we've got persistently low storage levels. So at this moment in time, we keep an eye on this. The Dutch gas price is trading around 87 euros a megawatt. It's still it needs to break below 80 before we can really start to see any positive impact, potentially also further negative impact on oil, because then the gas to oil switch may start to weaken somewhat.
What about the thermal coal situation in China, which you've got on slide 11? Because does that mean that the price is falling, that the supply situation is increasing, and therefore also maybe the whole bidding up of LNG cargoes might abate, or what's going on there?
That's also part of the story, John. Absolutely. The Chinese authorities have been quite successful so far in curbing these runaway prices, especially in coal. There are, and I think at this stage it's probably mostly due to just basically striking down really, really firm and hard on speculative activities and investment activities. So coal prices down 42%. There was also talk about for future years to put in some kind of curb mechanism on coal prices. But generally, they're doing everything they can in order to incentivize increased domestic production, and that has at least for now taken some of the sting out of this coal rally, which also will support lower prices in gas through the link to LNG. Aluminium, another one, which is also down 19%. So we're just going through a phase here where there is some profit taking coming in. It's also hitting the wider market, metal market, where we see copper down 1% today. It's roughly corrected 50% of the run-up we had over the past month. So quite a lot of new length caught off-site now. So that's also why the market coming down. Speculators has been piling in last week when copper reached the high levels, and they are getting squeezed at this point in time.
Yeah, price controls, very interesting approach, and one that doesn't solve your supply situation. There was an interesting episode in the 70s where they tried to cap the price of gasoline so that refineries basically didn't want to refine products because they couldn't get a margin on them. And that's what ended up seeing gas lines. Those gas lines in the US were never necessary. There was simply not a price clearing level for gasoline to be produced. Any thoughts on weather here? You've got some thoughts on slide 12 on the threat to weather. I assume that feed into agriculture, of course.
Yeah, I think it's been a long podcast already, John. So I think I'll just we'll probably maybe just keep that for another day. But just briefly highlighting that we are seeing a return of La Nina. That is something to do with the temperatures in the eastern Pacific, and we can see they are basically on par with the low levels we had last year. That is generating weather worries around the world. So droughts in South America and very, very cold. Potentially colder than normal weather across the northern hemisphere. That's clearly not going to help us with the current gas crisis we're seeing. So just the weather formation that potentially points to even an additional level of volatility over the coming months. But we can dwell more into that in one of the future podcasts.
Yeah, and just rewinding a bit to where we were talking about, Peter, we were talking about profit margins potentially having peaked. I think there's the main source of fuel for this market has been, at least in the last couple of weeks, has been this. If you look at slide 9, so I'll try to lead you through it here. But if you look back at what crushed the market in 2018, it was the Fed's rate hiking regime and the whole yield curve lifting in the U.S. And you know, this was after they were actually as well as shrinking their balance sheet. It was just an unbelievable tightening that finally tilted the market over. But one of the key accompanying points of that was with those high yields is well above the inflation protection and the so-called break-even. You can see there the black line. So you had positive real yields, a very different environment from what we've seen post-pandemic. That's on the right there where we've seen those nominal yields way below, of course, realized inflation, but also below where people are pricing their fears and hedging their forward inflation in terms of the TIPS, which is what the break, the Treasury Inflation Protected Securities, which is what that black line represents. So you're seeing right now an interesting divergence and people bidding up that hedging on the break evens so that the feared negative real rates is growing wider once again. And as long as the negative real rates are going wider and wider and the feared rate negative rates are going lower and lower, that can potentially drive the equity markets ever higher and higher, unless, Peter, like you're saying, people start to realize that other fundamentals like earnings, profit margins, maybe even credit, I don't know, start to intrude and change that picture. I don't know if you have any thoughts on that.
Well, I think I think higher interest rates, we've seen that before. So what's interesting about the 2018 and 19 period was actually that it was a period with the profit margins declining in the MSCI World Index and earnings actually coming down a little bit. So the rest of the market, so the technology parts of the market was rallying at that point in time. That was that part of the market was very immune to what was going on the macro scale of inflation expectation and the interest rates. So I think the current environment we're moving into resembles a little bit what we saw in 2018 and 19. So you have this shift to net profit margin pressures, and then at the same time you have interest rates coming higher. They have to square or close that gap with the inflation expectations. It's very acute, at least in Europe, and it just pushes up the discount rate and reduces the value of future cash flows. And as we sit at some of the highest equity valuation, it just creates this scenario where you could see a pretty steep repricing. And I think the parts of the equity market that are most vulnerable to these interest rate rises, of course, the very, very, very rich equity valued growth companies, and then the ones that are very indebted because of the pandemic. So that's everything related to travel-based companies or airlines, hotels that have racked up a lot of debt, could be retailers that have a lot of debt. So these type of companies will see a more meaningful squeeze on their bottom line from high interest rates as they roll over their financing needs.
All right, let's look at earnings. Any brief thoughts on further updates after yesterday?
Yeah, it's such a long podcast, but we do have to talk about it because yesterday we had three major earnings from Visa, Microsoft, and Alphabet. Microsoft, just blew the expectations, or was surprised on the upside versus expectations. Very strong performance across all business segments, and they surprised positively in the cloud business, and the shares were up. And whereas Alphabet, they deliver very strong earnings in Q3. They didn't give any guidance, which is still very weird for a company of that size. I think it's unacceptable. But they were a little bit under pressure on the cloud business versus Microsoft. So this was definitely a quarter where Microsoft were winning, and a little bit of a sour grape there for Alphabet. But overall, very strong earnings still. And then Visa, very strong earnings, but they missed on their cross-border transactions, and they're saying that the traveling activity is not picking up as fast as they had expected, and that goes to that story you were running around talking about so much yesterday, Ole, at the office, that a lot of the business travel segment is not coming back to the same degree as was expected, also from airliners like SAS. So there will be a lot of adjustments going forward. And then the key story was not the key story, but I think the one that really spooked the market the most was Robinhood. So Robinhood shares were down 10%. They lowered their revenue guidance for this fiscal year to 1.8 billion from previously 2 billion. The Q4 revenue guidance were a little bit north of 350 million versus over 500 million expected by the market. So if you take an annualized basis on what they expect for Q4, then the activity level and the profitability of Robinhood is coming down pretty hard. So unless we get a new bout of volatility in markets and crypto in particular, then Robinhood will probably face a little bit of a headwind. And then I've singled out here in Europe this morning, we had the earnings from BASF, one of the largest chemical companies in the world. And then they're maintaining pricing power. They're able to raise prices a little bit faster than their input cost, although their EBITDA margin a little bit weaker here in Q3. But I think what is noteworthy is that if you look at the analyst estimates for revenue for Q1 and Q2 next year, you can sort of get a glimpse of that post-pandemic, steady growth rate, because chemical companies is a very good barometer on industrial activity and in activity in the general economy. And you can see that the expectations are very muted there. So I think there's a little bit of a canary in the coal mine there. And then the two most important earnings to watch from a technology and a macro perspective of Boeing, of course, today reporting earning, and then eBay, and then around it's sort of in the at the margins of those two earnings releases that we have in focus, General Motors and Ford Motor, of course, interesting, and then Spotify also in the technology sector. That was a long one. Sorry.
No worries. There's so much to talk about earnings wise, and we'll have to follow up, of course, tomorrow. I've pretty much covered on the macro side. So on slide 14, you can see the rest of the bits and pieces. The Canadian Central Bank meeting today, fall budget statement from Chancellor Sunak a bit later, and then, or not later than Bank of Canada, but a bit later this morning. And then we have the Brazilian rate announcement. Quite interesting there when you have senators trying to sort of take Bolsonaro out with accusations of poor behavior at minimum around dealing with the pandemic and even, quote, crimes against humanity. So that's a lot of tension there. The central bank, for its part, has been railing against the level of fiscal stimulus that is going on, which, as the government's trying to stimulate the economy ahead of elections, which are still almost a year off, but expected to hike 150 basis points to 7.75% to get ahead of inflation, which the latest report sees at over 10% year on year. So a key test for the Brazilian real very late today. Bank of Japan meeting out overnight. No expectations there. We'll follow up on that tomorrow morning. And we need to wrap this one up, so we will do so. But then please, of course, join us tomorrow with the next Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter at Saxo Market Call or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.